Hey everyone, this is the Libertarian Atheist Podcast with myself, Carlos Morales, and MK Lords. You can find everything at libertarian-atheist.com, as well as the Atheist Facebook page and group. Make sure to also subscribe and rate and review on iTunes, Stitcher, whichever podcast app you're using. It helps more people find and enjoy the show and boost up our ratings. You can also donate using Bitcoin or PayPal on the site as well, if you like. Now that that's out of the way, the topic today is a continuation on the article and podcast I wrote called How MDMA Cured My PTSD. I was unsure if I was ever going to write that article and give it up publicly, due in part because there's still a stigma related to people who choose to use exogenous chemicals to propel their consciousness in a way that standard therapy has difficulty doing. But once I realized that would be actually a selfish act, because I had a great benefit to said drug, that I wanted others to actually gain from it as well. A major benefit I found with MDMA was an overwhelming feeling of reverence toward the subconscious filters and feelings which propel the actions we commit, a sort of empathy for our own inner thoughts, and a sense of catharsis by expelling the inner dialogue which helps and hurts our life. It's a body chemical reaction that flows from the chest that cries out to remove the shame which keeps us in a state of fear, a fear of embarrassment, ostracism, and dislike, a state which in many cases isn't solidified through reality, but is a projection of the inner disdain one has of oneself. This disdain was built up by the trauma experienced from a young age to adulthood, and has led to emotional filters which guard us from feeling something real, because true empathy, love, and compassion can be used against us. And this is out of a fear that we will once again have those parts of us manipulated. Because of that, we bubble wrap our true emotions to guard ourselves, which leaves ourselves isolated and prevents the connection that we've always wanted. It removes the shackles that prevent honesty, because honesty can only be accomplished when we begin to actually remove the hatred we have of ourselves. Every lie we say about ourselves is an omission or reengineering of facts to mitigate the awful aspects of ourselves. Whether those aspects are awful or not is subjective in some sense. But we are afraid of sharing those because we are filled with guilt and fear. As a result, when that person we were dishonest with falls in love with us or expresses a deep connection, we don't accept it because they've fallen in love with an archetype of you rather than the actual you. You feel as if they don't actually love you because they don't know who you are. And this becomes worse when you realize that they're probably doing the exact same reengineering that you're doing. So how does this relate to MDMA? Well, once you take enough, it's hard to be dishonest or non-empathetic in that state, as long as you actually have the capability of being empathetic and have a kind of critical eye towards what you are experiencing, not just taking in all the feels, but also being able to understand what's going on. Because whether you like it or not, there's going to be millions of emotions and memories which will flood your mind. Stating all that, I'm going to get off the pro-drug propaganda pedestal so that Megan can add in a bit. So what have you found were the benefits for you of whether MDMA or any of these other drugs?
So I first used MDMA probably when I was 19, I believe, and I'd had a lot of built up baggage in my life from different traumatic things that I'd gone through. And I've always found it a lot easier to listen to other people and not really open up to others myself. And I found myself, you know, in a situation where I was introduced to this chemical and I thought, you know, why not? I'll try it out. And yeah, it was very therapeutic, actually. In fact, they used to use this drug in couples therapy and family therapy in the 70s before it was banned. And there's a reason why, and that's because it opens up these communication barriers that we sometimes have between ourselves. Basically what you said in the intro, and I found myself more easily able to talk about some of the things I'd gone through, some of the pain, you know, that I still held on to, and a lot of this feeling of self-loathing that I had had for a very long time too. You know, people who've dealt with depression or even PTSD, things like that, really have a hard time loving themselves and a hard time connecting with, you know, that part of them. And I think there's, you know, good in just about everyone, you know, obviously not, you know, sociopaths or something like that. But I do like to try to see the best in everyone. And it helped me really confront a lot of this stuff instead of avoiding it. A lot of people think that when we use drugs, we're trying to avoid connections, or we're trying to hide emotions or push down emotions. And what this did is it kind of brought those feelings up to the surface. And then instead of just being like a puddle of emotion, I was able to communicate it more clearly. It's as if certain pathways had been opened up in my brain that connected those feelings to being able to express them clearly. This is a big thing for me as a writer and someone who does podcasting and things like that. I want to make sure that I'm being very clear when I'm communicating. And up until that point, I had had a hard time expressing it. I, you know, had written a lot and, you know, written a lot of poetry and things like that. But it was really hard for me to talk about things. And it was really hard for me to kind of get those thoughts out of there in what I thought was a clear way. So it was a really cathartic experience. It was really transformative. And what I found was that, you know, after the substance had worn off, which it typically lasts anywhere from maybe 6 to 12 hours, depending on how much you're taking, I was left with residual effects of a more empathetic approach, just generally speaking, to other people that I had known, even people that I maybe didn't like or didn't have good relationships with. I found it easier to, you know, maybe not be so harsh internally towards them and, you know, even get along with them better if I would come across them or something. And so it's as if my general empathy was increased, you know, for a time after that. And I still think that, you know, and I've done, you know, a few times since then. But since that very first experience, I felt a major shift towards being more empathetic. And it also just, I mean, I guess started kind of coming naturally too. It's not something, of course, with drugs, you have to be extremely careful and you have to be responsible. You're saying like pro-drug propaganda. I'm pro-drug. I guess I'm pro-responsible drug use. I think there are a lot of things that can be used for therapeutic purposes. And MDMA is definitely one of them, you know, especially if you're taking it with people that you really trust and that you're taking care of yourself and, you know, approaching things responsibly. So, yeah, it's been very beneficial. And it's something that, you know, it's unfortunate that it's prohibited from being used in therapy now, and it's restricted from the general population, too. I mean,
bringing up overall the importance of the responsibility of using the drug. So prior to this, even a year ago, I didn't quite realize the therapeutic benefits of MDMA. I had kind of heard about it, but then I'd thought about MDMA, those kind of scare stories. I remember there was an HBO documentary where they were showing this dad who had holes in his brain and all these other terrible things were happening. But that guy was also using massive amounts of it at clubs with 10,000 other people and not taking care of his overall health besides that. So you have to take certain precautions prior to using the drug. Stating that, though, I think the benefits outweigh some of those specific issues, though. Now, for someone who is holding on to sanity by, you know, a thin string, then it's not exactly going to be for you. I can't really think of any of those drugs that would probably be beneficial in those particular situations. It's also important that the whole ecstasy term, which I'm completely fine with it, because it actually does kind of characterizes or conceptualizes the benefits of the drug, because you do have a feeling of ecstasy or catharsis coming from it. That to understand that it's not just for grinding on people while you put a baby pacifier in your mouth. It's not just for that. It's also the therapeutic benefits as well. So when it comes to any of these drugs, obviously we're promoting a responsibility. Stating that, I will also state, though, that the majority of the drugs that people think are safer, namely alcohol, is much less safe than MDMA, and you can check multiple studies. Alcohol also causes more schizophrenic outbreaks per capita, the amount of people actually using it, than drugs like PCP, LSD, and all those other scary drugs that the government has been manipulating us into believing that they are negative. And part of the way that they've been able to signal this whole idea of these things being negative is by continuing this idea that it is unvirtuous, unwise to manipulate your consciousness in some kind of way without recognizing, of course, because it's the government, they never recognize the truth, that everything we do within our own life is to manipulate our consciousness in some kind of way, from going outside to eating a burger to hanging out with friends to having wonderful conversations. We're always changing around our consciousness, our frame of mind, our emotions, our feelings. We're always doing this. And so to try to make a virtue out of not doing a particular activity that is not going to harm anyone else is kind of like saying that I'm better than you because I didn't jump out of an airplane and then ended up going safe. There's no virtue to that, right? There's virtue to not committing actions that will hurt others, like murdering, raping, stabbing, or whatever. Although I don't walk around going, isn't it great that I haven't stabbed anyone today? You know, I don't really think of it in that way. But it's important to take away the moralistic shaming judgment that comes from creating this state of mind that you're allowed to be more open in. Because I think of these drugs in many cases kind of as a tool to be able to achieve things that you weren't able to achieve prior to. It's kind of like this. If say you're 5'8" and you've never been able to dunk a basketball, and then suddenly someone's able to stick you with a drug, which for say 1 hour allows you to grow taller, and then you can go dunk that basketball right afterwards. And whenever the drug wears off, now you're about 5'10 or 5'11. Now you can't go dunk again right now, but you've been able to see what it's like to be inside that. So in the same way, I don't want to be as empathetic as I am on ecstasy all the time because I just couldn't get any shit done and I would have way too many feels. It is by getting great joy out of that openness, out of that communication, that's actually part of the lingering effect. It's not just the biochemical stuff. It's also the memory basis. I get to remember how great it felt to finally be open and to remove that shame that I felt for whatever particular activities. In my case, it was, you know, being a state actor and doing some fucked up stuff while working for Child Protective Services. So I was acknowledging the shame and then resolving the shame in one fell swoop with every single word that came out of my mouth. That to me was a really beautiful aspect of it that I got, and I think other people can have as well.
Yeah, and it's different from other substances because it doesn't really act as a band-aid for trauma. What it does is it kind of rips open some old wounds even and allows you to confront it without being more traumatized, if that makes sense. Yeah. If you have a problem communicating these things, obviously with trusted people you'd want to use this with. But it's very beneficial for that. It's a good tool. It may not cure you from whatever trauma that you've gone through. It's not, you know, I don't think drugs are necessarily always a cure-all for things. But what it can do is allow you to grow and get better at working through those issues and resolving them. And of course, when you're, you know, resolving trauma, it's always going to be a process. So it's a good kind of tool to help along with that process of healing.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And when we think about normal society and what's going on when it comes to openness, obviously we're kind of left in the situation where we're not supposed to be open with other people because we kind of fear being hurt. It's easier to shit on things when you're with a group of friends than it is to actually talk about your legitimate passions, because you're not going to be judged if everyone is tribalistically condemning a specific person, specific action, specific genre of music, or any of those things, because you don't have that kind of fear. And this is all part of kind of the autopilot nature of modernity. And that seems like a stretch, but I promise you, we'll get there. So a large amount of the actions we do is to make time go by faster. From listening to meaningless talk radio while driving for a 1.5-hour commute to a job you hate, to putting on headphones while at the job to make the time go faster, to the second commute back home, to the beer you drink when you get there to mitigate the pain that is your existence, and the meaningless television you watch to make the time go by even faster. You have 438,000 hours of waking time if you're lucky, which is about 27,375 sunsets, and then you end up 6 feet under. And I think there's someone smarter than me said this, but I fear that time is wasted on the living, for the living never know how little time they have and how much they're taking it for granted. They're afraid of being alone with their thoughts, because those festering subconscious wounds you were kind of alluding to that are only partially bandaged through the cascade of entertainment and artificially created urgency that subsumes their every waking day are brought to the forefront when they're alone. Legalized drugs, cigarettes and coffee, which stimulate, and alcohol, which blinds, are essential to keeping the autopilot nature of modernity going. Shrooms, LSD, and MDMA put the inner thoughts to the forefront of one's mind, which opens the curtains that show the aimless nature of an ever grind-filled life that is not truly meaningful. So it's not a surprise that the government would want to, as I'm titling the video, the war on drugs is a war on consciousness. They're trying to steer your consciousness a specific way because that allows for more manipulation and allows the gears to keep going and the heads rolling on a constant basis. They're afraid of these things. I think they're afraid of them taking them themselves because then they'd actually have to feel the pain of what they've done and the actions that they are propelling others to commit in the name of God, country, and all the other abstract concepts that they've decided to make up to be able to control others.
That's a really good point. And I've had experiences on psychedelics like mushrooms, for example, that resulted in me making some very large life decisions very soon after, because what I realized that the path I was on wasn't going to be fulfilling and it wasn't going to be meaningful, and that the only person responsible for making my life awesome was me, and that I had that power. And it was just a series of making better choices and following the choices that I was already making and really loved to do instead of following the choices that I felt I had to do. And that's how I ended up where I'm at now, which I'm way happier. I'm transitioning jobs right now. I'm going to be working in a, you know, totally different field than what I'm used to. And I'm taking a huge chance doing that, but I can't wait to do it. And then whatever else it is I'm doing, whether it's writing or hula hooping or anything like that, I have like a weird list of hobbies, but they're all things I love to do and they're all things that give me meaning and are fulfilling to me. And I've had a minor degree of success at a few of them, and that's great. And it really came from a few of these things where all of these expectations that I'd allowed other people to put on me, or that I'd put on myself too, just kind of melted away. You're familiar with the term ego death. And yeah. We've talked about this before. And yeah, it's a really great thing. And I want to read this quote. Let me see. So if you end up with a boring, miserable life because you listen to your mom, your dad, your teacher, your priest, or some guy on television telling you how to do your shit, then you deserve it. And that's one of the main lessons I walked away from psychedelics with. And it was very empowering. A lot of these things just kind of melted away. And I realized that, yeah, I can do this. I can make my life really awesome. I can live the life I want to live and survive just fine instead of living the life that other people think I should live or that seems productive or accomplished in society.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was certainly getting a feel for that. I talked about a bit in the article where I was talking about using psychedelic mushrooms in order to... It wasn't even actually on purpose. I was with a group of friends and I was working for Child Protective Services at the time, and I decided to do a whole bunch of shrooms because I was listening to Joe Rogan podcast. He was talking about how great shrooms were. I did a small amount of dose before that. This time I took about 5 or 6 grams, which, if people don't know, is a shit ton of shrooms. And whenever I consumed it at first, there were some rather harsh reactions, bodily functions wise, a bit of vomiting, you know, not so good stuff. And then I started getting this overwhelming feeling of my body kind of leaving me. I was kind of looking over myself and my sense of self started even detracting, which is it's very strange to kind of grasp it. But I stopped thinking about what I was doing was in the real world. I was seeing it more of an objective lens. I was seeing myself going day after day to a job that I hated and doing things that I found to be unethical and justifying it at the same time, all to live a life that I didn't actually want to live. You know, married to a person that didn't work out so well, paying all the bills in that particular case. It's important to pay your money, pay your bills through violence. That's even better. And I kind of started acknowledging and seeing everything that I was doing that was wrong. I didn't feel overwhelming shame as a result of it. I knew that I could change my given situation. And it kind of influenced and steered me in a way that ended up making me quit the particular position. Now, when it came to MDMA, I had already quit CPS. I'd written a book about it. I'd spoken publicly about it. But the guilt, and I actually would talk about this in my speeches. I would always start it off with like, I'm guilty of working for CPS, for working in it for an agency which has hampered freedom throughout the United States. That whole digs. But I really did feel that guilt and that shame no matter what I did. No matter what I produced, I would always feel bad for what I did. And it wasn't actually benefiting anyone for me to feel that shame anymore. In my mind, there's this kind of religious idea that I still needed to feel like crap all the time, that I still needed to have nightmares in regards to what I did. That was kind of part of the post-traumatic stress disorder. I also got something called depersonalization that I can go into later, but I haven't had any of those episodes since then. it was just that feeling that I'm a worthless piece of shit. And I acknowledged that pain that was recessing inside me, and then an acknowledgement of, you know, a lot of other individuals have kind of talked about the work I did and the help that I've gotten, that I've given them from it. And there's this term, it's called imposter syndrome. It's basically where more and more people believe in you, that you feel more and more like a fraud because you believe that they don't really know who you are. And weirdly, it's a self-congratulatory self-consciousness or an egotistical disdain. Because what it is in a weird way is that it's the belief that those who think highly of you are too stupid to see how worthless you are, which at the same time is a statement that others are not as intelligent as you. And the more that people put you on a pedestal, the more fear you have that you are a fraud. That's not healthy for anyone, right? And it's that inner thought, that inner child when you're 8 or 9 years old, when you're getting made fun of, when you're 14 or 15 and you would talk about the dreams that you would have and you'd be explained why you have to go to college and get some worthless job in order to be able to do something with your life. It's after you quit working for the state and now you're not exactly sure how the hell you're going to make money. So you're jumping around doing sales jobs and writing up blog posts and aimlessly trying to do these different things just to be able to figure out something to subsume and lower the amount of guilt that you had. It's trying to make some kind of meaningful part of your existence. And what you come to realize is this is the only life we have. And by living in this shame-ridden mindset, it's only going to hurt you and you're not going to feel any legitimate happiness out of this. Happiness is not an end to itself. It's not the entire purpose of life, but it makes this life a lot better if you're acknowledging the reality of what it is rather than keeping the blinders that society has put you under, that is put in front of your eyes to be able to see what is actually going on.
Yeah, imposter syndrome is something I've struggled with and something that some of the most very successful people I know have struggled with. And it is such a crazy thing to think that you know, oh, you're not good enough. And I think a lot of times this is instilled in us from a very early age, whether it's through our parents and our upbringing or just kind of what we see is generally seen as successful in society. You know, you have to, you know, get good grades and then go to college and then get a good job. And what does a good job even mean? What does success even mean? We don't even stop to really question these things and really see if there's, you know, and ask ourselves a question, well, you know, what does society see as acceptable and good versus what do I want to do? What am I passionate about? What brings my life meaning? We're told that that doesn't really matter much sometimes, you know, by different authority figures. And when you realize that that should be like your motivating factor for living. I mean, we get one chance on this earth. You might as well live the fullest life possible. Even if other people are going to think you're weird and they're going to question you. And, you know, I did for several years of my life, I was doing things as like, you know, other people are like, why are you doing that? Like, and I sometimes didn't even know. I was like, I don't know, but it feels good and I love it and I'm going to keep doing it. It's okay to be weird. It's okay to be different from the rest of society. And I think the part where kind of MDMA comes in a little bit, at least in my life, was it made me feel less weird and more like that was okay. And it's okay to kind of embrace that inner weirdness and not feel shame over it. And I'd felt a lot of shame and guilt for a very long time about very many things. And like you said, when you're able to express that and express it very clearly, as you're saying it, it's a very interesting sensation. As you're saying it, that guilt and shame is just melting away and you can let it go. It's like you're just, you can like say a sentence and like, you know, put all of that baggage on that phrase and just let it float away as it leaves your mouth. And that's really, really liberating. And I hope that more people can have an experience like that where they can. And it really, it's about being honest with yourself, too. This has been, I guess, more of an experience I've had with psychedelics like mushrooms and LSD is a kind of confronting, like, get your shit together kind of
yep.
experience. Like, it's been all internally in my mind. Like, when people think about acid, they think about talking to, I don't know, like Janis Joplin on a hill somewhere. And I've never had that kind of experience where I've seen a lot of external hallucinations of things that weren't there. For me, it's been more of an internal experience of breaking down certain barriers I had. And then also kind of like my brain kicking myself in the ass and being like, hey, what are you doing with your life? You need to straighten up and get your shit together. And that's not the case with everyone. But like, I've had very kind of confronting experiences like that. And in a positive way, I've also had a lot of laughter and, you know, the kind of silly wordplay that, you know, can come with if you're in a group of friends tripping or something like that. That's always really enjoyable. But for me, the therapy of that has come from a swift kick in the ass by my brain, by I guess you could say your subconscious.
Yeah. And, you know, there's many, many people out there who can better put kind of how to go about doing these trips, like finding your correct drugs, heroin. There's also MDMA, little test kit things. So you got to make sure, obviously, you're getting the correct stuff. The set and setting is obviously important because you want that empathetic ear. I couldn't imagine doing MDMA by myself. That sounds actually kind of shitty because you kind of want that connection and all the other lovely things that come with it. I did also try LSD very recently, and I'm very, very positive on that. I'll just say, just visuals, awesome. As well as, you know, just the ability to be able to empathize and do the connection and talking and everything. People assume, I think, by how quickly I talk in this podcast and how much content I produce, I'm like this all the time. Really not. I'm a lot more introverted half the time, and the majority of the time I'm either writing or playing guitar or something. And it is that capability of connection, because of the more shit you go through, the more times you fell in connection or in love with some person. And the more times that ends, that kind of creates scar tissue every time, where it reminds you just the feeling of that connection scares you, because you know the negative feelings that can come if that goes away, while you are being excited at the exact same time you're being cast with fear. Now, I can understand that in the same way that I can understand if I'm driving 110 miles an hour, I'm like, holy shit, this is awesome. Oh my God, I can die. So there is that kind of risk reward thing that's constantly going to your head. But I find that the fear can become overwhelming, and then it prevents you from being able to do after that. And when you were talking about getting your shit together, I certainly was in that camp. I am producing these things, but a lot of it was, where the hell are any of these websites going? Where are these blog posts going? Where are these whatever podcasts and everything else? I'm just kind of creating content, but no one's able to actually see it. So who am I doing this for, and why am I doing this? And am I actually believing in the words that I'm saying? Because if I'm not really believing in it, one, I'm taking people's audience time for granted, and two, maybe that's preventing me from doing more marketing because I'm afraid of the reaction that I can get afterwards. I was kind of afraid of what people would think about me even talking about drugs here. Then I realized, what the fuck is wrong with you? So what if a few people say, oh, you're just a bunch of stoners? Obviously, not all 28-year-olds have written a book who are stoners. There's a lot of people who have accomplished many, many things who actually were quite influenced due to drugs. Steve Jobs is actually one of them. And I also wouldn't state that doing drugs in and of itself will then create that empathy, right? Because the Aztecs and the Mayans both used shrooms. They both cut off the heads of kids. So you have to have that extra aspect, the critical thinking, the logical part. It's why you can't really have a legal system completely based off of empathy, because whether or not we like it or not, empathy can also be used to manipulate other individuals. Most wars are a result of manipulating people's emotions, that empathy that they have. It's why they'll show you a video of ISIS beheading a white person so they can justify killing 1,000 of them. Because in our minds, we can empathize with one person, we cannot empathize with the entire tribe of people. They've done studies where they showed that if you have, say, one girl who's kidnapped, like, or in some kind of, kidnapped, and then if that girl then has a brother, the amount of empathy for both of them will go down. And if you add in about 10 other people, then you almost don't even care. And it's because the more and more there's people, the less and less you can empathize with, which is actually kind of a scary thought, because it's not just the one white girl thing. It's just adding in more people. So all of those things can be tools to manipulate individuals, which is why empathy cannot be the end-all, be-all of any kind of moral coding. It's also why it's a bad idea in court cases. Whenever they have eyewitness testimony, whenever you're in court, they have a woman who will say, you know, this man killed my wife. And I mean, or whatever, you know, this person killed this other person. They'll be crying and they'll be sad and everything else. And what they found was that if the person saying this, talking about this person being murdered, if they look more like them or look more like the judge, or if they're more tearful, there's a higher chance that the person will go to jail for even longer, which is why you also notice like black people going to jail for even longer than white people in a lot of these cases. It's harder to empathize, so you feel more disdain whenever the justice comes through. So all of those things are wonderful tools to fuck with this on a constant basis, which is obviously why I'm not saying this is the only thing that you need. But that kind of compassion, that kind of inner depth and understanding, that kind of inner therapy that can occur whenever you're taking these things in, those can be tools. It's just there's not just one thing, right? In the same way, there's no one size fits all, and there's no central planning that can ever occur that can perfectly tell you what to do with your life. We're not telling everyone that they have to use drugs. I'm just saying, really seemed to help me out in my particular situation, and from what I can tell, it also helped you, Megan, and a lot of other people that I've known, and even people that I've spoke to since using this particular drug have stated that they noticed that I'm way more open, willing to have these conversations, listen, have this dialogue. I honestly think I write better now. A lot of these benefits have kind of come from this, and it's made me a happier person overall, a more productive one as well, more kind of organized thoughts. And so it's not just when you're experiencing the drug that's important. It's also what happens afterwards. Do you journal afterwards? Do you write about your experience? Do you express these things? Do you try to understand? Do you conceptualize them? If you don't do those things, then it was just kind of a fun party drug, wasn't it?
Right. Different people need different things. And if you're already an open, empathetic person, I mean, it may not be for you. It may not even be something you need. You may already be in touch with your emotions. And I think that's great, you know, that people, you know, can be on that level naturally. And I know a lot of people who are. But if these are things you have struggles with, then it might be beneficial. You know, obviously be responsible, you know, be careful, you know, and be trusting of the people that you choose to do this experience with, because I think that's the most important thing. You want to be around people that you can trust, and always take care of yourself, you know, in these situations. It's not a cure-all, but it can be a huge benefit for creating a kind of a more open dialogue in your life with yourself and others.
Absolutely. Is there anything else that you wanted to add in? I'm sure there's other stuff that we didn't cover here. It's just we're throwing a kind of a lot of information at the audience all at once. So is there anything else?
I think that's pretty much it. Just, you know, be responsible and smart about things.
Yeah.
And it was something that has profoundly changed my life, I would say, for the better. And don't listen to a lot of the demonization, because, you know, most drugs that are illegal, especially psychedelics, are heavily demonized. And when you realize the benefits of them, then I think there is a bit of an agenda there to demonize these substances for very specific reasons.
Absolutely. Okay, so I hope you all enjoyed this particular show. We're going to be jumping into talking about, you know, bootlickers and state worshipers and all the other good stuff on our next episode, which I think you all enjoy, and we'll have Calvin back for that. Remember that you can see all the updates at libertarian-atheist.com. Please subscribe on iTunes, Podomatic, whatever thing you're using. That really helps out. We were number one in all philosophy, number 24 overall podcasts on Podomatic recently. I'm trying to keep those numbers keeping stacking up, and I'm really glad that you guys are enjoying this and sharing this information. So definitely check that out. And if you want to find my original article regarding MDMA, you can find that at thinkaboutnow.com. Alrighty, folks, I will see you soon.